Good afternoon, listeners and viewers. This is Ron Stefanski from Disrupt Ed, where we talk to the disruptors out there. And what I mean by disruptors is the do-gooders, the determined, the passionate and purpose-driven, who are helping us to understand this ginormous 5G wire technology interconnected, workforce augmented, globally interdependent world of work and learning. And today we have a high octane guest with us, and it is a personal privilege for me to welcome Lucas Singer onto the show today. For those of you who have been following us from the very beginning, you have seen the 21C sports car phenomenon. You have heard the Kevin Zinger story, but the most fascinating chapter in the Zinger story is, in my mind, son Lucas here, who at the ripe old age of 28 years old has over 50 patents to his name and has been a force behind Zinger Vehicles and Divergent 3D. So today we're going to hear about his story, but also his undiluted vision of where Divergent and Zinger Vehicles are going. So Lucas, welcome to the show. And thank you in advance for letting me geek out a bit about having you here today, but it's a real privilege to have you.
Ron, thank you for welcoming me to the show. And I'm actually honored to be here and just super excited to talk with you about what I think is an absolute game-changing technology and company.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. And so I want to start from the beginning. Let's hear a little bit about your background. So you follow your dad's footsteps and you go off to Yale. And then you get into investment banking upon graduation. And somewhere along the line, the next thing we know, the two of you are scheming to change the world as we know it. So walk us through how that all took place.
Yeah, absolutely. So really, if I start from the very start, I was actually born in London. So I really spent my childhood moving every 2 to 3 years, which in hindsight for me, I think was actually a great opportunity. I met so many different people. I saw so many different cities. I thought it was like to relate to different types of people and also to interact and have these experiences with people that, you know, worked in different ways, had different cultures. And I think that early on was actually hugely important to me. I ended up going to high school in Los Angeles, which again was a big step for me. LA's got this car culture. LA's got this outdoors culture. LA's also got a deep aerospace and defense and engineering scene to it. And all of that came into play when I was in high school here and kind of really laid the foundation for ultimately why I was also so interested in Divergent and that vision when eventually I stumbled upon it after college graduation. But I went to Los Angeles High School to Yale. At Yale, when I started, honestly, I had applied with an art supplement and I thought I might be an art student. I was really into design and architecture. I'd studied a lot of history.
Well, your mother's an artist, correct?
Yeah. My mom's a sculptor. So I applied. And when I got there, I just looked around and I said, hey, you know, I've got the best professors in the world here. I've got an opportunity over the next 4 years to educate myself. And then upon educating myself, really enter the workforce and hopefully do something that's going to change the world. Right. I always had some sort of ambition to not just lead a normal career, normal life in that sense. And I just thought, what's one of the more difficult but more tangible skill sets I could pick up? And that was engineering. So it was a mix of passion and also a kind of calculated thought, frankly, on, hey, what is going to give me the base to actually do something meaningful when I do graduate? And that's when I stumbled on electrical engineering, had some great mentors throughout my 4 years there. And when I graduated, I went into finance. So I worked, you know, during the day, during school on engineering. But when I was doing my summer internships, they were honestly in investment banking and at hedge funds. And I thought investing was hugely interesting as well. It gave you exposure to a lot of different companies. And it gave you the mechanics of how kind of the business and finance worlds really work in terms of merging and companies, in terms of growing companies. So when I graduated, I went to a firm called Centerview Partners, really, you know, I'd say extraordinary biotech focused investment bank in San Francisco. And I had a great, you know, few months there, frankly, before I took a day off to see my father, Kevin, speak at a conference called the Solid Conference in San Francisco. And I thought I was just going out to that conference to support my father and be there for him.
This would be a good son here, right?
Yeah. Just take the day off. And I'm sitting there and I've worked a few long weeks, so I'm pretty tired in the audience. And he starts his presentation about 20 minutes into it. I'm like, oh man, this is actually pretty cool. I think, you know, Kevin's onto something with these ideas. And I work one of my internships at a battery company in China that he had started. So, you know, we had talked about these sort of ideas, but I hadn't seen the full blown presentation in that sort of sense before. And I remember I went back to my banking job and I just thought, man, my dad's about to, you know, start a company. He's got the vision for something. He's the only person in it right now. I've got an engineering background and some finance chops now. I'm 22 years old. If there's ever a time to take a risk, it's now. So I just remember I gave him a phone call and I said, hey, you know, how about I quit my investment banking job and come work for you? And honestly, it was a mix of him being hugely excited about it while also thinking, damn, I've got a kid that just went to Yale, has an amazing first job and is on a steady career path. And he's about to quit to join essentially just me in a seed round startup here. And I think in the end, we talked quite a bit and we both just said, let's do it. I bet on, you know, frankly, bet on him, bet on myself and bet on that vision and haven't looked back since.
What a story, an absolutely amazing story. And I'm really fascinated, having spent a lot of time with Kevin, at the relationship the two of you have. And it's an extraordinary one in the sense that there's no father-son tensions, competition. There's just a very, very deep connection. And I have to believe that part of it is an intellectual one, that you're both working on solving some really, really massively important challenges that are out there in the world of manufacturing. And so talk a little bit about that. As you started the company, your pencil and paper, really starting from scratch, right? You don't have a system that you can, you know, put your vision to and implement. You have to really create everything from scratch, from production and assembly to design to manufacturing, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely correct. And I'll start by laying the groundwork a little bit for how, you know, that vision turned into that development to then turned into this commercialized system. And we'll circle back to how it is working with my dad. And I feel completely blessed to be working with him because, you know, the level of trust and communication you have and also respect between the two of us, I think is really unparalleled and really a big motivating factor, frankly, to working as hard as we do and putting in the hours we do. But, you know, when we started, Kevin had this vision for, you know, what is an actual transition from analog to digital manufacturing? And why do we want to make this transition, right? And it really starts with why first. And that was throughout a lifetime of thinking about technology, automotive, defense, manufacturing. And it was really based on these two principles of one, automotive is broken from a capital structure and capital return standpoint because they're freezing all of their spend in tooling and infrastructure upfront. And then they're amortizing that cost off over, you know, a long amortization cycle of a given vehicle. That's a broken capital structure. And then number two, we've got this massive buzz around EVs, but that's only looking at one piece of the puzzle. What really needs to be looked at is cradle to grave life cycle emissions. And manufacturing is the biggest chunk of that total life cycle emissions picture. So let's solve the environmental piece as well. So how are we going to solve this capital structure? How are we going to solve this environmental piece in automotive and in manufacturing in general? And that was, you know, the problem statement. And then the solution statement was really, well, one, we want to make an engineering system that's more efficient and actually leverages high performance computing, right? AI, generative design, supercomputing, parallel computing, right? We have all these tools at our disposal. Let's actually apply them to real world structures design. So that was number one. Let's make designs more efficient, less mass intensive. Let's shorten that cycle, making something that truly is optimal. And then two, how are we going to manufacture in a way that has no product specific tooling? So you really are looking at, and it sounds a little trite, but this concept of what is a universal constructor? Well, it's a manufacturing system where the same set of hardware can manufacture any set of products And when you do that, yes, you do have hardware, but it essentially becomes a software-driven digital manufacturing system.
As I understand it, from what you're saying, is when you have hardware set up like this, you could conceivably, theoretically, be building a car in the morning and then turn your attention to building a rocket in the afternoon.
Absolutely.
Correct?
Absolutely. Minute to minute.
And that's just mind-blowing. People don't actually believe that. I was speaking to a professor with, you know, obviously the chops of a PhD. And when I told him that you guys had completely 3D printed an automotive, you know, an automobile, he said that I don't believe that. You know, yeah. I just don't believe it.
Yeah.
And that was made more difficult by the fact that this is my father-in-law, who's a certified bright guy. And he said, I don't believe it. And so he had to literally watch the episodes to say, wow, now I get it. But that's a big, you know, you just put out there a big impact statement there. So
no, absolutely. And I think you framed it perfectly. And I'll say the proof is just in the pudding. And every time someone comes to our factory here and actually sees this equipment run, you know, a light switch goes off and they say, okay, this is actually everything they said it was, but it took me coming here to fully believe it in some sense. But I'll give you an example. About a month ago, we did 5 different large automotive structure assemblies in the same exact day for 5 different OEMs. So we did a rear frame for one OEM, front frame for a different OEM, middle section of the chassis for a third OEM, and 2 other assemblies, all back to back to back, in our assembly system without changing a single piece of hardware, without having a single minute of downtime in between those builds.
Now that's really amazing. And I think this is another point of departure that I want to clarify for our listening and viewing audience. And for those of you joining us, this is Disrupt Ed, where we're talking to Lucas Singer, the co-founder of Divergent 3D and Singer Vehicles. Now, when you're doing this and you're building these structures and you can, you know, multiply that out. What we're now saying is Singer is much more than just setting out to change automotive manufacturing as it is. What you're really putting out there as a hypothesis is we can build anything you ask us to, and we can create the structures to maximize efficiency in terms of materials, design, assembly, and production, right?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, the impact of that statement, I think, is just what we should focus on as well before we dig into the details of all the grunt work that got us there as well. And the innovation, which is when you have that sort of system that isn't design specific, it becomes the first really scalable system that you can democratize in terms of creating access to in a global sense, right? You have hardware that isn't locked to one customer, so you have something that you can also finance to really achieve massive scale in manufacturing for the first time. So you essentially have something that is, you know, in some ways analogous to the Amazon Web Services, you know, server farm structure, where they have these servers and they maintain them, they grow them, they scale them globally, but everyone has access to them through the cloud, right? And what you're essentially doing is just building a capacity model. If you think about what Divergent can do here, they can build hundreds of factories in the future, have micro factories in every large city, and rent out essentially capacity to every OEM, every aerospace and defense company, every individual entrepreneur that just wants to make optimized structures can run through that system. And to me, that's, you know, sustainability in 2 senses. That's environmental and manufacturing sustainability, because you're making better parts in a more sustainable fashion. That's also social sustainability in a certain sense, because you're creating jobs and you're creating companies and you're allowing access to the most high-tech technology in a way that's actually economical, where you don't need someone to start with $5 billion to start a company. They can start with, you know, a seed round and then have access to, you know, what is the greatest, most technologically advanced manufacturing system and technology, similar to what you saw in the gaming industry, where it used to take massive amounts of hardware and, you know, massive amounts of human resource programmers as well. And now you've switched to, you can be in a small office in Santa Monica. Yeah.
Right. It's almost an infinite design cycle. So let me ask you this, you know, so you reach this point where able to do these things, and it didn't come lightly, right? So from a technical point of view, you raised over $450 million to do this. This took roughly 5 to 6 years to get to this point.
Yes.
You yourself have 40 to 50 patents, I think,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. About 50 patents, yeah.
Okay, and so this is not for the idle, you know, this is not for the idle of heart, the faint of heart, you know, this is full on in. So when your dad and I, when Kevin and I were talking over dinner, you know, one of the things I put forth and you know, this is after mind blown, you know, and I said, you know, why aren't we looking? And so I'm going to ask you the same question. Why aren't we looking at Zinger and Diversion 3D as a national security interest? And what I mean by that is you have the power to build anything. You could be building weapon systems for the U.S. military. You could be building other things. And to me, it seems like we almost have to harness and protect what you guys have built because the unleashed power of it could be world-changing.
No, I think you're spot on, Ron. You absolutely are. And I'd say right now, we're actually taking those sorts of steps of really gearing up in aerospace and defense and really gearing up in terms of our relationships on the government side. And I think over the 6 months, over the next 6 months, you're going to see Diversion's profile change quite a bit. You're going to see government interest in a scale that frankly, you know, you probably don't typically see the government move this fast on a new technology, but we're now officially working with General Atomics, making drone structures for them. We're in talks with another 5 large primes. We're going to Washington in about 2 weeks to meet with major generals and decision makers on the budget there. And I think, you know, that amount of traction within, you know, 3 or 4 months of saying we're going to enter aerospace and defense because this is a good technology fit, I think that's pretty extraordinary. And where we will be in 6 months, 8 months from now, I think might be along the lines of what you've just kind of predicted in some sense here for us. So now absolutely, you know, in terms of power to produce, in terms of even just scalability of things like drone systems for the US and to defend, you know, the good actors in the rest of the world as well, this is a system that's a game changer. You're talking about replacing a hand laid up composite process with a very, you know, time intensive cycle time and, you know, no real reworkability in terms of being designed locked to a system that within hours can design, print, assemble, and supply production grade military hardware.
Right. So when you're talking about something this potentially, you know, game changing on a scale which we haven't seen, it's accompanied by a fair amount of disbelief. And I had the privilege of being able to bring your Kevin out to Detroit, Michigan with the 21C to showcase it at Automation Alley. And I would say, you know, it's mesmerizing for the automotive industry. We had leaders from Ford Motors, Stellantis, Chrysler, General Motors, all there to see this great unveiling. And it's pretty spectacular. But at the same time, when I was having, just as I was having dinner with Kevin, I had a meeting the week before with a professor at the University of Michigan, Jeff Leiker, who is in the manufacturing space and is the author of The Toyota Way. So he's been following lean manufacturing. And when I talked to him about the impact of additive, I said, you know, is this something that, you know, it seems like it's inevitable that it's going to happen, but we're really trying to predict when. And he said, you know what, I've been at this a long time. I think there are a lot of people who have bold assertions about it, but I don't think the technology is quite there. We're going to see a lot of it focused on prototyping, taking part, you know, making parts manufacturing more simplified and sustainable. But I think we're probably a quarter century away.
Yeah.
And that's flat out wrong now.
Yeah.
If I'm listening to you correctly, that's not true at all.
I would love to take him on a tour of this factory and have a good conversation with him because I think his mind would change very quickly. But I will say, you know, what we're doing here at Diversion is completely different than the state of the AM industry generally, you know, globally, right? This is a team, a group of visionaries, a group of engineers that have invented something new that, yes, does leverage AM, but even our AM module is not a commercial module that a Toyota could go out and buy and try to implement in one of their factories. We're printing at a multiple, and I mean, you know, multiple of the conventional print rate. We've got a quality system that ensures the production readiness of our processes, but also our parts. And we've got a design engine that is unlike any other design engine out there. And then an assembly technique that frankly, no one even in that space has patents around these sorts of fixtureless assembly techniques for larger automotive and aerospace structures. So it is involving AM, but it's a new version of AM that's been really invented here. And it's in combination with the upstream design and the downstream assembly. And that is, you know, how someone that's probably very bright, which this gentleman is, I'm sure, can be so wrong about a statement of the level of maturity of this system, because he's thinking about the industry overall. He's probably not completely familiar with what Divergent's done here over the past 5 years to essentially advance AM, you know, 10, 20 years ahead of what most people thought was possible.
Just an amazing story. For those of you who are joining us, this is Disrupt Ed, where we're talking with Lucas Singer, co-founder of Singer Vehicles and Divergent 3D. We're going to ask you to stay tuned because we have more to talk with Kevin or with Lucas about, and we're going to do this in several episodes. So stay with us and join us for episode 2 right ahead and listen to more of Lucas Singer's story about the future of advanced manufacturing as you've never heard it before. Thank you. We'll be right back.